Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, the recipe for KFC is locked in a vault in Kentucky.
In the USA, you can only buy a Kinder Surprise on the black market.
And the Romans enjoyed a mysterious lost condiment worth its weight in silver.
It's forbidden foods.
Da, da, da.
Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with my fellow QI elves, Manu and Alex. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yeah, this has been a great topic to research.
Yeah, it's going to be a very short episode today. We're not allowed to talk about anything.
Yeah, it's all redacted,
we
actually.
We could beat the whole thing.
Yeah.
I've got some secret foods, I think. Secret recipes and things. You've got some...
I've got forbidden banned foods.
Okay.
Oh, and I've got lost foods.
Okay, cool. Ooh. Great.
Foods lost to history or extinct.
My first thought when I was researching this was about forbidden fruit, which we mentioned in the apples and or bananas.
Was it the bananas episode?
Yeah. So the idea that Eve in the Bible feeds Adam a banana potentially because we don't actually know what that forbidden fruit was.
But is it, do you reckon it's because she ate it so sexily?
Oh, it's just got censored.
Yeah.
Did she eat it as well?
She ate it and then she got Adam to eat it.
Oh, I see.
So I reckon they Lady and the Tramped it. And God was like, that is disgusting. Get out.
So I was wondering why forbidden fruit, things we're not allowed to have, are so desirable.
Oh, yeah. We love what we can't have.
Exactly. Yeah. And I came
like Tide Pods.
Have you tried one, Jack?
No, but I want to.
We should definitely do an episode on inedible foods. That would be great. They're dishwasher tablets or washing machine tablets?
For like washing clothes.
Squashy capsules for the washing machine detergent.
It's kind of an example of the flat earth theory. Like, if you shout enough about something that is patently wrong on the internet, you'll get people following you who think it's a good idea.
So I came across two theories that help explain why we love the things that we're not allowed to have.
Oh, yeah.
The first is called reactance theory, which was first coined by an American psychologist called Jack W. Brehm in 1966. Mm. And his idea, which is still a well-respected theory in psychology today, is that when we feel like our freedom is being threatened, so say if we feel that we're not allowed to do something or make a certain decision, we're kind of motivated to challenge that restriction, so like push against that boundary, which is why sometimes kids do exactly what they're told not to do.
Why
you like maybe sleep with that person you definitely shouldn't sleep with, because it's like taboo and banned.
Don't press that button.
Exactly.
Well, I wasn't going to until you told me not to.
And then there's another principle which is very similar in economics, which is really well known, which is called the scarcity principle, which was coined by another American psychologist called Robert Cialdini in 1984. And that's just the idea that we think that if something is rare or scarce, that people must love it and it's really valuable, which is why limited edition menu items really well, or limited edition anything.
Toilet roll during lockdown.
Exactly.
Like that was a double whammy, because we both thought it was going to be scarce and everyone was telling us not to buy it.
Yeah. I am the like guiltiest of this. If you tell me I'm not allowed something, that is the thing I want the most.
Yeah.
We also love all human beings kind of love a conspiracy theory and an underdog story. The idea that like if we're told we can't have something, there must be a reason for that. We deserve it, but someone else is trying to keep it from us.
Yeah.
The government doesn't want us to eat Tide Pods because they're so tasty.
Yeah. And they'll make us really smart.
Yeah.
I pop tea before every episode.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, that really does. The edit would be a lot easier if you didn't do that. Well, I was looking into why we might keep foods and recipes secret, because there is a long tradition of secret recipes and grandma's secret recipe, and also big corporations keeping their trade secrets. Mm. And it's really because legally there's not really much protection.
Really?
In many places around the world, the copyright laws, they've decided that a list of ingredients with basic instructions isn't really copyrightable because it lacks the quote unquote literary expression. Okay. Like, it's not artistic enough for copyright.
Right.
So you could copyright a whole book, if you write a whole cookbook with, you know, an introduction and stories and colour.
And a bit of flourish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So actually, maybe all those web pages where people tell you their goddamn life story, you have to scroll past before you get the recipe for porridge.
I see.
Maybe they're actually, I think they're just doing it because they're narcissists. But I think that actually they could have stronger legal protections if it came to it.
We get that problem with QI because you can't really copyright that Paris is the capital of France. But you can sort of... But I was just thinking the most basic thing that everybody agrees on.
Yeah.
And you can't copyright a fact, but then you can copyright like a whole curated show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're so right.
Whatever comes out, you know.
So you can't copyright a recipe. Mm. You can patent it. In order to patent anything, you have to publicly disclose what it is. You have to submit a public application.
Oh.
And the thing is, because recipes are so, like, even if you do successfully get a patent, it's so easy to like slightly change a few measures and people can get around it really easily.
Which you can't do with fact. You can't be like, Paris is the capital of France.
Yeah.
This suddenly is not true. Okay, it's time to crack into our first lunchbox, and this week that is Alex's.
I have brought a stack of secret recipes.
Whoa!
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, you went to art class.
So mysterious.
They're tea stained, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
So did you burn the corners a little bit?
It's like the Declaration of Independence from National Treasure.
Yeah. exactly. Anyway, so I have brought a selection of secret recipes because there are a lot of very famous ones. I'm sure you can name some.
Coca-Cola.
KFC.
My mum's bolognese.
Yeah, that's in here too. So should we start with Coca-Cola?
Coca-Cola.
I think maybe the most famous one. Invented by a man called John Pemberton in the late 19th century. And before his death, he shared the original formula with four people, we think. Oh. Okay. And then in 1891, a man called Asa Candler bought the rights to that recipe from Pemberton's estate, and he initiated the policy of secrecy, as much as for publicity and marketing, I think, as an IP protection strategy. Mm. Pemberton was a Civil War veteran with a morphine addiction, actually, and apparently he modelled Coca-Cola, his version of Coca-Cola, on the cocaine-laced French wine.
Yes! I think I did some research on this. Was it in the wine episode? Vin Marsalis or something? Vin Marsan?
Yeah. So the original formula of Coca-Cola had actual cocaine in it from cocaine leaves, famously. That was removed in 1903.
From coca leaves.
Shame.
So the way that it works, the way that they maintain the secrecy is that they've come up with seven what are called merchandises, which are the nine kind of components to Coca-Cola. Okay.
Oh, I know one of them.
Yeah.
Which water.
One of them is water. Actually, I don't think one of them is water.
I think water's in
addition to that. Okay. Merchandise number one is sugar. We know that it's sugar in the form of high fructose corn syrup.
Okay.
Number two is caramel coloring. Number three is caffeine.
Wait, are you about to spill the secrets here?
These are just the bits that we know. Number four is phosphoric acid.
Ooh.
And then the identities of merchandises 5 through 7 are a matter of debate. We don't really know.
Hmm.
In particular, the big mystery is merchandise 7X, and we don't even know what the X stands for.
Wow.
It's thought to be a mixture of like essential oils like orange and lime and lemon and lavender. People who run the factories are given these merchandises and they're told how to mix them and how much and in what order, but they don't know what's inside them. So that's how they've kept the secret for so long.
That's genius.
Wait, so what vessel are these things in? And then who puts the thing in the vessel?
It's probably a machine these days. Right?
Yeah, good question.
But who fills the machine? At some point, humans must.
Yeah, that's the thing. There must be a factory where they make the merchandises. But then you could separate that out so that only one factory makes one merchandise. Yeah.
There must be a conference, like a Coca-Cola conference, and then by accident the merchandise people bump into each other and they're like, oh my God.
Someone must do the order. They'd be like, why are we ordering so many cats?
I think logistically, But you think the secret ingredient is cats?
Yeah, dead cats. You heard it here first.
In 1919, the investors who owned the company basically insisted the formula be written down because it hadn't been written down. I think for insurance reasons, you have to have the all-important recipe for Coca-Cola written down. So it was written down and placed as collateral on a loan, actually, in a vault in New York. And that stayed there until 1925. Then it moved to Atlanta, where it stayed for 86 years. And then in 2011, it was moved to a vault at the World of Coca-Cola in Atlanta, which is basically like a theme park. So it's now in like a public-facing vault.
I've actually been to the vault in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
They've got like a whole Coca-Cola theme park. Uh-huh. And I went round when I was a Firebrand student and they've got little feedback forms at the end. And I was like, thank you so much for poisoning the world and making everyone obese. And
oh, you legend.
Oh, like, my God. Find it. Yeah. Stick it to the man. And now I'll just beg for their sponsorship money. So, yeah. Yeah, no, the vault is a... They've done quite well, given that the thing that you're meant to see is not able to be seen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, they've basically just got a big vault. And I suspect it's not actually behind that door. Yeah, no, it was interesting.
That's super cool.
Apparently, only two employees are allowed the complete formula at any given time and they're not allowed to travel together. I mean, it's all very overdramatic.
That
you know.
Would be such a good rom-com. I would love
that. Or the person who knows the secret ingredients to Coca-Cola and the person who knows the ingredients to Pepsi or something. And it's like, it's Romeo and Juliet.
It is very Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, the Montagues and the Capulets. Yeah, that would be nice. So funny.
There have been a couple of notable incidents surrounding the secret recipe, which I think kind of just add to the mystique and the legend. In 2006, an executive assistant at the Coca-Cola headquarters in Atlanta called Joya Williams conspired with two accomplices to steal and sell the company's trade secrets.
Whoa.
And they tried to sell it to Pepsi for $1.5 million.
What? That seems cheap.
It's crazy. I was going to say, it's really cheap.
Pepsi, to their credit, immediately called Coca-Cola and also handed everything to the FBI, who ran a sting operation. And so an agent met them pretending to be a buyer from Pepsi.
No.
And she was arrested and I think went to jail for 8 years.
That's the highest I want to see.
I do think they need like a special jail for people who do crazy crimes, because you can't put them in the same jail as like a murderer.
What are you in here for? I stole a car.
I failed to steal the recipe from Coca-Cola. The thing about Coca-Cola though is that like the value is all in the branding.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like that's why people drink it really, rather than the own brand stuff.
In blind taste test, Pepsi comes out on top, like, consistently. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, people don't drink it blind. Mm. They think Pepsi is the... I mean, it was the second one that came along.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's, like, the knockoff of the original, which is Coca-Cola.
In Coke's defence... Mm. It is a subtler, more sophisticated flavour.
Yeah, not everyone prefers Pepsi, but in general, because it's sweeter, so people like Pepsi more.
The one ingredient which I think makes it difficult to make actual Coca-Cola is the decoconized coca leaf extract, which is believed to still be an ingredient, which is only made, it can only be legally sourced from one like DEA-approved factory in the US. So, and I think Coca-Cola have control of that.
So they're taking the cocaine-y bits out of the leaf and keeping it. Okay.
What I really want to know is what's happening to all the cocaine.
Great. Question.
Well, I don't think you like get a coca leaf and take out the cocaine and then whatever's left you put in Coca-Cola.
You snort
like,
it out.
What do you do with all this spare cocaine? So Coca-Cola actually no longer contains either coca or cola.
Oh.
They stopped sourcing cola nuts, which are an actual thing. They're from West Africa.
Ah.
And they provide a bit of... if you have pure cola tonic, which you can get, I've had it in South Africa, it does taste like a sort of bitter version of Coca-Cola.
Mm. Well, cola sweets taste a bit off as well, don't they?
So cola berry is a thing, and so the name makes sense, but it was got too expensive and now they just synthesize the flavor instead.
So we'll go, should we go through a few others? Dr. Pepper, similarly, created in 1885.
Not a real doctor.
No, he's not a real doctor, created in 1885 by Charles Alderton. He was a pharmacist in Texas. He set out to make a soda syrup that tasted the way that his drugstore smelled, like a kind of blend of all the botanical extracts and fruity, and like, you know, I can kind of really imagine it actually, like when you go to like a museum and they have an old apothecary set up and it's like really musty and there's lots of like, you know, so I kind of really rate that as a
in my head Dr. Pepper's a really cherry-y one.
It's fruity.
He never patented his recipe so that he could keep it a secret, like we said. They've only confirmed that the formula contains a unique blend of 23 flavors.
Whoa.
Again, only three people are privy to the recipe, apparently. The formula is split in half and stored in safe deposit boxes at two separate Dallas banks.
Split in half which way?
Good question.
Diagonally?
Well, it doesn't matter. If you did it vertically, then you'd have all the ingredients but not the amounts.
What was it I heard the best way to strike through something if you want to like get rid of writing isn't a straight line, it's like wiggle.
Yeah, yeah, well, or write other letters.
Write other letters, exactly. That's exactly
it. So, like, write the alphabet over and over again. It might, maybe they would split up all the vowels on one and all the consonants on the other.
Oh, wow.
That's funny, yeah, because in my research, I can't remember, it must have been last episode, I found a paper, you had to pay to download it, but you could look at the free version, but they just turned all of the O's into apostrophes.
It just made it
quite hard to read, but
that's
actually
weird.
Like understandable.
There is a fan-assembled guest list of the supposed 23 ingredients in Dr. Pepper. Do you want to? I'll read them out, okay? Amaretto, almond, blackberry, clove, Cherry, caramel, ginger, juniper, nutmeg, orange, plum, pepper, root beer, raspberry, tomato, and vanilla.
Is that a list of the most popular girls' names in 2026?
The final one, maybe the most famous one of all, KFC's 11 herbs and spices.
Yeah.
Stored in a vault with two thick walls. Sorry, 2 foot thick walls.
Just two walls, not even four walls. They can actually just walk around it.
It's a nightmare. apparently, split factory production, i.e. they've got different factories producing different bits.
Like left Twix and right Twix.
Yeah, exactly. Only two executives know the full blend. Like, honestly, this two executive thing.
So many good love stories to be had.
Yes, we should do a whole trilogy. Also, they also famously on Twitter only follow 11 people.
Yes.
And they're like six people called Herb and the Five Spice Girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we tried to do that with our, when we first started an Instagram account,
we just followed
people with food surnames. That's what Halle Berry, Jasper Carrot, Ice Tea.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon.
There was a journalist called William Poundstone who did an analysis on the 11 herbs and spices in their famous batter. And he claims that actually it only contains four ingredients: flour, salt, MSG, and black pepper.
No herbs, basically no spices.
The company denied it, but they never produced any evidence to the contrary. So,
well, not in front of the public.
Yeah, exactly.
So these days, for allergen reasons, you kind of have to put all your ingredients on the packaging, certainly in Britain and most countries I've visited. So how do they get around that? Like, surely a Coca-Cola packet should say all of their ingredients legally.
Great question. And I looked this up. In most countries around the world, food manufacturers are legally required to list all the ingredients in their product, usually in order of how much of that ingredient is in the thing.
To prevent adulteration or allergens.
Mm-hmm. And everyone has to comply. And Coke and Dr. Pepper, for example, comply as well. And they list water and high fructose corn syrup and caramel color and phosphoric acid, natural flavors, caffeine. And natural flavors is what's doing the work there. The key exemption is natural flavors. And it's basically this catch-all FDA category that allows companies to list any complex blend of flavorings as a single ingredient without specifying what's in it, provided that all of these components come from natural sources.
But what's the issue if you're allergic to one of those ingredients?
Very true. This was people who get really kind of annoyed still about food adulteration, because that catch-all is quite dangerous because, like, natural sources can mean literally not food stuff.
Everything's technically natural.
Exactly.
Like, it all comes
wood
from earth.
Is a common ingredient in
mercury.
A lot of food. Yeah.
So yeah, the merchandise 7X and Coca-Cola and the 23 flavor blend from Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
That's all hidden under the natural flavors. To finish off, I found a kind of historic example of recipe secrets.
Ooh.
The spice trade, friend of the pod. For centuries, the Arab spice merchants managed to maintain a monopoly over the spice trade, not just by physically controlling the supply routes, but they also would make up elaborate lies about where the spices came from, like how they got them, how dangerous they were to harvest, and gave them these legendary stories.
I remember, I can't remember which spice it was, but they would say, it's from very dangerous nests on cliff edges.
Cinnamon. Basically, so this is from Herodotus, 5th century historian, 5th century BC
pretty
historian.
Pretty batshit crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, so he recorded a story about how cinnamon was harvested from the nests of enormous birds.
That's the one.
Identified as the cinnamon bird, or Cinnamologus. And they, like, nested on these inaccessible cliffs. According to the story, the harvesters would leave large pieces of meat below the cliffs, and the birds would, like, fly down and seize the meat and return to the nest, which would then collapse under the weight of the meat, sending the cinnamon, like, raining down.
Sounds like Tom and Jerry.
It's ridiculous. I know. And this is a story that went around for centuries. Obviously, it's not true. That's not where cinnamon comes from. Just to conceal the fact that they were getting cinnamon from, like, Sri Lanka and to justify the really high prices they charge.
So funny.
I mean, it's kind of advertising in a way, really, isn't it?
It's
like, whether you're being like, this is where we get our...
So do you think that it's really dangerous to, like, secure, makes it more hype?
I risked my life for this. I'm not settling for a low price.
But now we'd be like, what about those poor people who have to go and risk their
lives?
Think of
the cinnamon birds. Poor nests.
Yeah, this cinnamon's not vegan.
Okay, it's time for our second lunchbox, and today that is mine. I have made an ancient Roman recipe, Attila Lenticular, from a recipe from Apicius, with fake laser.
Fake laser.
Nice.
So laser is the word for this mysterious magical Roman herb that was also known as silphium.
Oh, the one that we mentioned in the intro.
The one that we mentioned in the intro. And the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans absolutely went mad for this. So this is basically lentils and leeks and vinegar and a bit of spices. But the key thing is I've added asafoetida.
What's asafoetida?
Asafoetida is an interesting spice. It's made from the latex of a fennel plant that grows in sort of East Central Asia.
Latex.
Yes. So you know how rubber trees, when you slice the bark, there's like a white liquid that comes out. It's the sap, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you dry that, you get asafoetida. Let me tell you a story about silphium. Romans and Greeks, the ancient Romans and Greeks, absolutely loved this herb, okay? Mm-hmm. And it only grew in a very thin slice of what is now Libya, which was known as Cyrenaica. Mm-hmm. We know they ate it because the Greeks minted it on their coins, and there are lots of cookbooks. I mentioned Apicius. That's where this recipe comes from.
I remember Apicius,
didn't he
yeah.
do the asparagus?
The asparagus, Apicius, our friend of the pod, but fast for coming.
So they were crazy for this?
They were crazy for this, but it died out. In fact, it's the first recorded species extinction. It died out sometime in the first century AD, and we know that because Emperor Nero ate the last stalk.
That is such a flex.
Well, as in, they probably thought it had gone, and then they found a stalk, and they were like, we should really offer this to Nero, shouldn't we? And he died in 68, Common Era, so...
It wasn't after eating the silphium.
No, not directly after, but sometime after.
What do we know about it? Do we know what it tasted like?
We know what it looks like because of these Greek coins I mentioned, which minted like an image of it. Mm. And we've got descriptions of it. It was supposedly... It popped out of the ground in 638 BCE after a black rain fell on this part of Libya. And it was much adored, and it lasted for 7 centuries, and then it basically got over-harvested, we think, and was so ecologically dodgy that they probably had one slightly drier season, and then the whole crop was gone. But what people would do is they would find the inferior, it was known as Parthian laser. Parthia was a part of what is now northeastern Iran, which is asafoetida. So we think it's close to asafoetida, and I've made this dish from Apicius's recipe, but instead of genuine laser, which you can't get these days, I've made it with asafoetida.
Okay.
Should we try it?
Have we dig in? Should we have a go? This is edible, right?
Yes.
It's really pretty, Jack.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's got these lovely dark lentils and light...
Leeks.
Leeks. Mm. I mean, that's perfectly tasty. Mm.
But you're not going mad for it. And I think that's because the laser is fake.
It's quite fruity.
Yeah. It's perfectly nice. It's like a side dish. But yeah, I mean, it's not amazing. It's not like exciting.
I really like it, but
it's very vegan.
But that's such a burn.
The actual original silphium was used to treat growths on the anus via fumigation. So you'd blow on your anus with a smoke made from silphium.
Did it work?
No, well, it was Pliny the Elder, so probably not. So, twist in the tale, we thought this was lost, but there was apparently some bushes in Turkey which seemed to match the exact descriptions of silphium, only its location as a closely guarded secret, lest someone find out about it and harvest the whole lot. And it's gone.
Is this in the modern day?
Modern day.
Ooh.
When were they?
So this was discovered in 1983 by some schoolboys who went and told the local professor of pharmacognosy.
This sounds so made up.
Pharmacognosy, pharma as in like growing.
Yes.
And then cognosy as in knowing, cognoscere. So like it's like professor of the knowledge of... Like
medicine or drugs.
Yeah.
So basically, he's an expert on getting medicine from nature, mostly plants. Okay. And he's a man called Mahmut Miski, who's at the University of Istanbul. And he discovered them in 1983 when he was told about it by these boys who were like, there's this weird crop growing. Maybe you'll be interested. Anyway, he spent the last 40 years trying to propagate it in his laboratory in the University of Istanbul. And he's had some success. And he noticed it was the second ever example of a fennel species called Ferula drudeana. A first example of Ferula drudeana was discovered a bit further into Turkey in 1909. So he thinks this might be the original silphium.
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh.
So he brought it back to his greenhouse and has been trying to grow it for 40 years. Mm-hmm. But he's noticed that there are a number of properties that link to properties we know about Sylphium. Mm-hmm. So something the classical writers extol the virtues of is its powerful and intoxicating aroma.
Feels great on the anus.
I didn't manage to find out whether it worked on his piles. And this modern one that he's found, Ferula drudeana, contains GABA, which is the active ingredient in alcohol that makes you feel good. So we thought maybe, you know, the ancient Romans and stuff were sniffing
it.
Apparently it's used in dozens of recipes, and it was used to treat practically every ailment, from the dog bitten to the scorpion smitten. Miski says it's a pharmacological goldmine. He says, and I quote, "It's like you combined half a dozen important medicinal plants in a single species."
Wow.
So he's seeing the links there. It was also noted that bees instantly mate after they've rolled around in its sap, which is something the ancient Greeks alluded to because they treated it as the most powerful aphrodisiac, right?
Right.
The shape of it looks like, as I said, the coins that were minted. Yeah. And it's said to have appeared after a great downpour. You know, I mentioned the black rain. Mm-hmm. And this modern version sprouts and grows up to 6 feet in a month after the rains in April.
Whoa.
So it's quite linked to like a heavy downpour.
Wow. What do we think of black rains? Do you reckon black as in it was so heavy that you couldn't see it?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, the trouble is, the only missing link is that all the classical writers are adamant that it only grew in this one sliver of what is now Libya. Professor Miski found it 800 miles away in Cappadocia. Mm-hmm. And we know that the ancient Greeks struggled to propagate this plant anywhere else.
Climate change.
Mm.
I don't know.
And also, like you can find stuff like, it's not insane that it...
But how would the seeds get from Libya to Turkey?
Giant birds.
But anyway, we did find one report of a merchant who brought some Sylphium seeds to Anatolia to try to grow them, which is modern-day Turkey, but they failed to grow, so he gave up. Mm. But the seeds can lie dormant for 10 years. So what probably happened is he cast the seeds and they didn't germinate.
Aww.
And then it had the sort of downpour that is needed, and they sprouted, but he'd since abandoned his farm.
I'm sold. I think this lost food has been rediscovered. So, a very limited amount of it that is currently growing in greenhouses.
And he's trying to grow it, and he's managed to grow it in Istanbul, in his laboratory, but he doesn't want to reveal where the...
It's all secret.
...original, like, valley that it was found
in.
We know it's in Cappadocia.
You can't currently have any, then?
No.
Okay, well, he has to be his mate.
Do you want it now?
I really want to try this stuff. Having read all these ancient Roman reports about how great it is.
Can you ever try it? Does he give it to anyone?
Well, there's a woman called Sally Granger who has a fascinating YouTube channel and a blog, and she's a proper academic on ancient foods with a specialisation in Roman history. And she tried it, and she actually made this Aliter lenticulum with Mr. Miski and a few cameras. Mm-hmm. When it was made with the pungent asafoetida resin, it provoked grimaces, apparently, which is what I've given you.
Okay.
But when you made it with Ferula drudeana, it was deemed complex and delicious.
Wow.
So, yeah, he is open to, like...
Collabs,
basically.
Let us slide into his DMs.
So we should.
Want to try this.
It also may be responsible for the heart shape being, like, symbolic with love. Because its seeds are heart-shaped.
I know.
And it's an aphrodisiac,
so cool.
Right? And weirdly, a contraceptive. Apparently women would sort of, I don't know if they ingested it or rubbed it
so
on.
So it's both an aphrodisiac and a contraceptive.
I know, it sounds like the perfect drug.
Yeah. That's amazing.
You can have sex and not get pregnant, but it can't be farmed. And that's why it was so sought after and worth its weight in silver, because it only grew in this small valley in what is now Libya.
That's amazing. I'm so excited that maybe one day
we'll crack the code.
Yeah.
But even if it is our beloved Sylphium, it might not cater to modern tastes, because the Romans, they didn't have, you know, chicken katsu curry or Coca-Cola or MSG. Yeah. So I think our modern tastes are much more used to crazy and wild varieties and higher sugar and salt content, right? So that's my best attempt at a Roman dish that is impossible to create.
Great. Thanks so much. I came across something called the Ark of Taste. Have you heard about this?
No, I do, because I'm an avid listener of the food program, and Dan Saladino is always banging on about the architects.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. So have you heard of it, Manu?
No, I haven't. What is it?
It's an international catalogue of endangered heritage foods that's maintained by the Global Slow Food Movement. The intention is to preserve at-risk foods, things that might be dying out. They have a unique taste. Maybe they're part of a distinct region. Mm. Rather than conventional conservation, often they kind of actively encourage cultivation of the food rather than just consuming it, because they want to encourage this.
Yeah, eat more of this endangered quinoa rather than like eat more black rhino.
Yeah, exactly.
Encourage people to grow more of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Since 1996, more than 3,500 products from over 150 countries have been added.
I think they should add silphium.
Yeah. Well, if it's not there, you can nominate it yourself. They've got a nomination form and you can say, like, I think this should be added and this is why.
I'm trying to think what I'd add.
Right, you could add meningic coffee, which is it's not a coffee, mm-hmm. it's made from a pistachio berry. Ooh. Or a terebinth fruit.
Has it got caffeine in it then?
No, it's caffeine free, but it's drunk kind of in the same way as culturally like a coffee, and it's only drunk in a corner of southeastern Turkey, and it's on its way out.
Don't talk to me until I've had my meningic. It doesn't really have the same ring to it.
Okay. It's time for our third and final lunchbox. And this week, that's Manny's. What have you brought, Manny?
I have not bought my lunchbox today.
Because... Oh, you're fired.
Yeah. We're not paying you for this episode.
Fine. Because I didn't want to get more time in prison.
More time.
Twist.
We're recording this from prison.
Today, I wanted to talk about prison contraband foods.
Ooh.
And I wanted to start with the yogurt mafia.
Yes. Are they Greek? Is it the Greek yogurt mafia?
Kiwi, actually. Oh, so cool. The kiwi yogurt mafia.
Delicious. Again, is that kiwi flavoured yogurt?
New Zealanders in prison making contraband yogurt. But it's actually an incredibly wholesome story.
Ooh.
So in 2013, there are two friends called Wal and Dylan, and they used to make methamphetamines together.
Okay. Aww.
It's very wholesome. And then they got caught and they went to prison.
That really is a forbidden food.
So it's actually, they have really obviously harrowing backgrounds of drug abuse and unstable homes. Mm. And they've lived really hard lives, which is how they ended up in this situation. And then Dylan got sentenced to 4.5 years and Wal was sentenced to 14 years. So they were doing like pretty long stints in prison. Anyway, so one night they're in prison and River Cottage comes on, as in Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall's River Cottage.
The TV show.
Yes.
It's like for anyone who's not in the UK, it was a very popular British, very chintzy.
It's quite whimsical.
Yeah, like, cooking show with this guy called Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall.
Anyway, so in this episode, he is making yogurt from scratch.
Okay.
And how do you make yogurt from scratch?
So I think we covered this in the yogurt episode.
Okay.
You take a starter culture and then you heat up your milk and you kill all the microbes in it that can get in the way.
Oh, yeah.
And then you add this culture once the milk's cooled down enough, and then you keep it somewhere kind of warm, and then the culture starts fermenting all of the sugars in the yogurt and it kind of sets it.
Hmm.
And that's how you end up with yogurt. Anyway, so Wal has a history of kind of like hunting and gathering, like big wilderness nerd. And he's watching this and he's like, we should make yogurt. Oh my God, Dylan, let's do it. This looks so much fun. The only problem is yogurt is actually a restricted item in the prison, reserved for inmates doing like quite physically demanding jobs, because it's high protein. High protein is a really coveted food in the prison. And it's also a little bit sugary. And sugary foods are prohibited because they can be used to make alcohol.
Oh, no.
So this is kind of like hot property restricted stuff.
Wow.
Pumps.
Where do they get the starter culture from?
And so Wal had a painting job in prison. Uh-huh. And because of the extra physical labor he was doing, he was given yogurt. So they use some of Wal's yogurt as a starter culture. So they figure out, using Hugh's process, how to make yogurt using milk and the microwave and all of these kind of like makeshift tools in their prison cells. And they like leave it overnight and hit it by the heat pumps, the heat pipes.
Like the hot pipes and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, overnight. And when they woke up in the morning, they had yogurt.
That's crazy.
It's so sweet.
But that's seriously impressive because it must be so hard to like regulate the temperature and like the timings and everything, right? Yeah, Isn't it quite a precise recipe?
It's really precise because, yeah, like we said, if you go too hot, you'll kill all of the microorganisms. Yeah. But also you need to go hot enough that all of the other kind of dodgy microorganisms you don't want in your milk are gone. So it is a really scientific process and they managed to get it down with very few resources. Anyway, so they got really, really excited. They started perfecting their recipe. And then they got so popular, people were like trading with them to make yogurt for them. They were teaching other inmates how to make yogurt. They became known as the yogurt mafia. And this trade is like actually into prison in New Zealand. So it's not just their prison. Yogurt making as a kind of popular activity in food spreads across New Zealand.
Was it like in Paddington too, when like the prison turns into a restaurant and everyone's like cooking?
It was wearing little pinnies.
They are eventually released from prison for good behavior. And then
promoting good culture.
Yeah. I'm just imagining that. Like at the prison parole review and they're like, try my yogurt. This yogurt is good. I think you should be released to the public.
In 2021, they got to speak with Hugh Fanny Whittingstall himself and tell them their story. And it was super wholesome. The interview's online. You can go check it out.
Wow.
It's such a lovely story. And now they're like doing really well.
They should have traded recipes. Like, you gave us the yogurt recipe, Hugh, so we're going to give you our meth recipe. River Kettage.
So then I was looking at other contraband foods in prison. So this is from Her Majesty's Prison and Probation Service Food in Prisons Policy Framework Annex A Guidance Manual.
Sounds like a great read too.
Oh my God, it's riveting. Yeast, alcohol-based flavourings, mace and cloves are all prohibited items because...
Because mace is a weapon. You could beat the guards with it.
It's actually alcohol production. Oh. So if we think about yeasts and fermentation, all of these things can be used to make and flavour alcohols. And cloves in particular are used to kind of like mask the smell of other illicit substances. Right. So that's a no. Poppy seeds are also restricted because in 2014, there was a group of prisoners in Brixton Prison that were complaining they kept failing their drug tests because they'd been given cake with poppy seeds in them.
Of course. Which befell Angela Rippon, didn't it?
Yeah.
She's failed a drug test from a poppy seed bagel.
And is that actually true, or is it just sort of, it could be true, so therefore it's a really good excuse?
Well, that is exactly what Edmund Tullett, who's a prison governor there, wanted to find out. So he ate some of this bread and then he failed the drug test as well.
And now he's in prison.
So poppy seeds, absolute no.
That's interesting.
Porridge.
What?
That's porridge, like, is what they used to call prison.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's so ironic.
Porridge is such a ubiquitous prison breakfast that doing porridge, became like...
Oh, that's what it's called, doing porridge?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, because that was just like so associated with prison food. Interesting.
Exactly. But in 2018, so this is particularly a prison in Wales, Her Majesty's Prison Park in Wales stopped serving it because they realised that prisoners were using porridge to jam up the lock in their prison cells. So there was an inmate called Stephen Bruno who wrote about it in a prisoner's magazine called Inside Time.
As in T-H-Y-M-E?
He said that people were using it to block up locks and they were like, okay, no more porridge.
Oh, it does turn to cement if you leave it, you know.
But the prison did say that ready breck was still available to prisoners, just not porridge. And lastly, chewing gum.
I can see how you can MacGyver that into any sort of...
Exactly. So that is a really big no-no.
You can stretch it out and use it to lower yourself from the windows, down the walls.
Abseil. Do you chew it? Yeah. Chew enough. It also can be used to jam up doors, can be used as a mould for keys.
That's so cool.
It can be used to stick things under surfaces. So if you want a high contraband, you can just use a bit of gum, stick it under a table or something and no one can see it. So now there are a lot of prisoners who say if you want to hang a picture in your prison cell, because blue tack's not allowed either for the same reason, you can use toothpaste. As a makeshift glue.
And that doesn't have the same... I guess it's not... You can't press a key into toothpaste, can you?
No.
If you dried it, you probably could. Wasn't there a prison escape? Mm-hmm. Do you remember where it was?
I remember they smeared peanut butter over the...
It was peanut butter, wasn't
over
it?
Over the numbers on the signs on the door. So they changed their prison cell from like number 13 to number 18 or something. And then they covered up an exit sign with the same peanut trick. Butter. So then the guard like checked number 13 and it was like, oh, it's fine because there shouldn't be anyone in here. But actually it was number 18 or whatever.
With peanut butter?
Yeah.
Who is guarding these?
Well, it was like came out in the news. Everyone was like, what is wrong with this Starbucks? Like the fact that they covered up the exit sign and then the guard like opened the door for them or something. It was so stupid.
Yeah.
But anyway, peanut butter, it turns out, is the main culprit for if you want to escape prison. Yeah.
Should add it to the list.
Yeah, well, if this comes out and you're yeah. Who's going to hear it first? The prisoners or the prison guards? So that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
And we also want to hear your suggestions for future episode topics, so do let us know if you have any good ones.
Oh yeah, definitely. Slide into our DMs.
So that's it. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Onrio, Alex Bell, and me, Jack Chambers. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.